You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
NBA season starts, and whenever that happens, Amin El Hassan, the signal goes up, and he flies from wherever he is, and he parachutes in to spend time with us because this is his time of year. Happy to have Amin in with us. Stugatz is out. Greg Cody is headed in, so you will get to enjoy soon him putting his computer together, the parts together, the headphones. He will not know how to do anything. He'll come in loudly. He'll foul up the show as we go. I wanted to start, though, with the story involving Allison Williams and Disney and ESPN mandating that people get the vaccine. It was a little startling to see Washington State coach Nick Rolovich fired with a handful of assistants because he will not abide by the mandate. He was doing this secret private dance where he wasn't actually advocating for anything and now flatly fired. And Allison Williams has worked very hard to get to what is a destination for a lot of people at ESPN. And through, you know, holding back tears on Instagram, she's like, I can't put my paycheck over my principles. And Disney's saying, we need a safe workplace environment and you're going to have to follow state and city protocols as well as Disney protocols. So she no longer works at ESPN.
I'm not here to judge, but allow me to judge. This is where your principles come up. Think of all the stuff that has happened in this country over the last 18 months. Real stuff, real life-changing stuff about people's rights to live, not to get vaccinated, not get vaccinated, wear a mask, not wear a mask. I'm talking about life or death. The George Floyd stuff, what's happening in Texas with women's rights. This is where her principles showed up. That's the thing that sickens me the most about the people who don't want to get vaccinated. Look, if you have a legitimate reason, like I got a friend who has an uncle who says, hey, whenever I get vaccinated for anything, I always have really severe adverse reactions. Is that reason enough to forego it? For me, probably not. I'd still do it. But I understand if that's your stance. It's like, man, I don't feel good when this happens to me. Or, you know, I'm afraid of needles, personally. If I hadn't taken the vaccine or if someone tells me I didn't want to take the vaccine, why? I'm just scared of needles. They freak me out. Again, a long logical debate would probably end with you should probably still get vaccinated, but I understand. But when you say, it's my principles. What are your principles? What are your principles?
Freedom. Freedom is the argument. Freedom to choose what it is that I put in my body.
She said that she's trying to have a child and her doctor recommended she didn't take it. So, if she talked to a doctor, according to her, said she shouldn't, then.
But Billy, that's my point. If she had said, hey, this is the pinnacle of the career that I wanted, but I can't put a paycheck ahead of my baby's health, my health. Hey, I totally get it. Hey, more power to you. But she didn't say that. She used the buzzword, my principles. My principles is this thing that people are running with as if this makes them somehow morally superior. When in reality, it just makes them sound like morons.
Well, I don't think that is helpful at all, the last part of that, because everything that we're having around this conversation ends up turning into some sort of argument that involves name calling. I think you're better off.
Why didn't
off.
Call names? I said she's behaving like a moron.
It makes her sound like a moron. Yeah, I feel like
that's the action. No,
we'll allow it. Play on for me, Clive.
Again, you tend to put people off when the starting point is you're stupid, you're dumb. Hell, people are coming back at me because I've described some of the behavior as reckless and selfish. I try to squeeze as much of the judgment as I can out of this to talk about it reasonably, but the disconnect on it where you're calling someone who a moron who believes, or you're saying someone sounds like a moron who believes that their principles are something in the realm of freedom fighting against government, against distrust, waving around the flag as their principles are the most American of principles to be anti-vax. That's the argument.
The argument is, if you are for freedom and if you are against government tyranny, there seem to be a lot of stops on that train line you get to before Vaxtown. Is like, oh, this is my destination.
But this is where we are now.
There are
now,
also
though.
A lot of other vaccinations along the way that you never batted an eye at. But this became, this is the final trump card. And I use that word purposefully.
No.
And I do think that selfish is fair. I mean, I got vaccinated and it feels like a selfless act, but I also got vaccinated for selfish reasons. I want to get back to my life. So I think a lot of people can be coded as selfish when it comes to this.
But Mike, let me say this. I don't mind if people selfishly don't want to get the vaccination because I want to have a baby, because I'm afraid of needles, because I get adverse reactions against for every vaccine I take. Selfish reasons to me, I'm fine. Be honest. Hey, this is what's happening in my life. That's why I don't want to do it. When you want to wrap yourself in a flag and stand like George Washington, crossing the Potomac, like that's the part I'm not with.
There's a lot of people in the mentions that are doing that. I will say the baby thing, you don't know people's story. You don't know people's struggles. I have plenty of friends that have been told by their doctor that have had struggles getting pregnant. Hey, don't get it. Don't chance it. They're on board with it and they'll do it afterwards. This also seems like that, but also virtue signaling when you just look at the mentions and how she's being used.
Well, but I would say, you know, look, I know how divisive all of this is, and I know how divided all of us are, but in a vacuum, it must be hugely frustrating to be a person who believes you're taking care of your baby, your body, you're following doctor's orders, and your company is mandating something that is for the greater good, that is a community health issue. You've arrived at a point that is hard to get to where Allison Williams has gotten to, and it must be very frustrating. I understand how those people arrive at a place where they want to put their fists up when they're being called virtue signalers or morons or worse. And they're like, I just lost my job trying to protect my baby. Like, that must be quite the confinement if you believe this ardently.
Then say that. Don't talk about principles or freedoms or, you know, don't become Saw Gerrera in Star Wars. We're like, I'm fighting against the Empire.
They are using code words in that instance because there are ways to bring that message across to where you're also down with the cause, right?
Mm-hmm.
She could have made this just about that, but she used code words that makes it seem something larger than it probably is, or maybe it is indeed.
You mentioned Vaxtown earlier, mm-hmm. and I feel like that might be the solution to all this. If every county just comes up with a Vaxtown, might need to be a couple towns because, you know, a lot of people are vaccinated. It might get crowded, yeah. But I'm just throwing it out there. No bad ideas.
New York City?
You throw out your bad ideas with the last That's sentence right. of no bad ideas.
Segregation historically has not been a good thing.
No, it hasn't. No, no.
You just got to frame it differently.
It's been a bad idea. Yes, segregation has been a bad idea.
I'm with Chris. This is a marketing issue. Guys, I think we can label this in a way where it doesn't feel quite as dirty as segregation. Oh, dirty word. But
the non-vax town is called Funtown.
Funtown. Freedom town.
Yeah, for those because like they get to like live their lives, blah, blah, blah.
Freedomville.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Segregation is harsh. It's more like Soho House.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Greg Cody has now arrived, so we can get deep into the Miami Dolphins talk, because something we did not talk about yesterday, Emmanuel Ogba after the Dolphin game, after they lost to Jacksonville, and what's happening with the Dolphins, I think... the core of it is this. It's not just the losing, and it's not just the 20 years of losing. It's that this franchise for two decades, outside of Ricky and maybe Tua, how many times have you actually hoped, I suppose, that Parcells and Saban were hope creators, but that didn't work? How many times in the last 20 years have the Dolphins had something to hope about? Because I think that's why they're getting hit. I think that's how Brian Flores goes from 10-6 to immediate hot seat, starting this slowly. And after that loss, because the fan base is rabid and crazed, and because portions of fan bases all over the place remain racist, Agba puts out on his social media, he smoked someone out who was just calling him the N-word, and just it just said, look, I normally don't do this, but this needs to be seen. I think it's a pretty decent way to handle it if people are going to be that comfortable putting their names or their avatars or their social media identities on that kind of blanket racism.
Why doesn't social media do more about it, too? Because in the United States, Witty actually alerted me to this. Across the pond, the onus is on the social media companies. Think about any time you put out an Instagram story regarding the vaccine. You get an alert, there's a lower third, COVID-19 information. It's all in the effort of truth. But you mean to tell me they can't come up with an algorithm for the N-word?
They should, and they have that. I mean, there are those things in place, right, to weed out those words. And, you know, invariably, when somebody like that is comfortable using the N-word on social media, they're a very sad person with four followers, and they're completely to be ignored. But if I were Twitter, there would be a search, there would be an algorithm, and anybody using the N-word would not be on Twitter anymore.
Well, hold on a second, because this is a conversation all the time between, you know, it was Ice Cube who went on Bill Maher and says, no, you don't have access to that word, but I do. That word's not for you. I can use that word. Like, you're now in your wanting freedom,
right,
and wanting companies to align with your moralities. You are now taking that word out of the mouths of others who might use it as well. And that's, you know, it's not equality there. White people and Hispanic people, anyone other than Black people, shouldn't be using that word.
But there isn't even an "are you sure" prompt, like, when that word gets thrown out there.
I don't think there should be that, Mike. I think in terms of policing that, it should all be reactionary. Meaning, we're all free to say whatever we want to say and live with the consequences that you live with afterward. If someone wants to use the N-word towards me with their name on it and their avatar on it or whatever their fake account is, let them do that, and then let the process follow. Okay, this person has used hate speech online. All right, we can track the IP address. We can ban them. But I don't want people living kind of under the guise of, hey, I'm a nice guy, I'm a friendly guy, and then at home.
But most of the people doing that are already covered in some sort of burner account.
That's what I'm saying.
You're not doxing them.
They can track IP address. They know, like, here's the thing that we can say for sure. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, well, they all know. They want to know who sent these messages and where they came from. They can do it. I had, when my whole thing with wrestling happened, I had a guy tweet death threats towards me and my family.
Why don't you tell people who don't know what whole thing with wrestling?
Well, it doesn't matter. That's why. And plus, you guys are so cozy with wrestling. I don't want to bring any heat towards the program.
Wrestling fans can be unreasonable. Most sports fans who are proprietary about their sports and are emotional about their sports can be pretty unreasonable protecting their sports.
All right. So this was probably 5 years ago or so.
This was a learning moment for Amin.
Not really. Now that I'm not in the company anymore, not really, not at all. It was to me, it was a learning moment about how dumb we can react to things without actually thinking about it, right? So what's the name of the wrestler, Mike?
You mix it up with Kevin Owens.
There it is. There it is. I was going to go Daniel Jones, but that's the quarterback of the Giants.
Danny Dimes.
He'd be a bad wrestler.
So, Kevin Owens won some intergalactic championship And USA Today had a tweet.
I hope there's an intergalactic championship. I doubt that there is. I'd like to see it defended by someone.
It was a universal title.
In a road game. Okay, the universal title. It's the same thing, intergalactic, universal.
At some point, they'll raise the stakes and go to intergalactic because we've got universal. And that was raising the stakes on heavyweight, which raised the stakes on WWE championship. But now I think we're heading towards intergalactic.
What is the last step on this? Champions of planets known and unknown?
Are we calling them horseshit, by the way? Because I don't know if there's someone on Mars really good at wrestling.
This is not at all going the way if we wanted to curry favor with the wrestling audience.
Well,
right,
I try to tell you.
You dismiss. Dan, why'd you ask him? Just he mixed it up with Kevin Owens. He said something kind of regrettable.
No,
Kevin
I didn't. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. No,
you didn't know about Kevin Owens.
Hold on. First of all, I'm not at the company anymore. I don't have to play this bullshit line anymore. I don't regret a single thing I said. I don't regret a single thing I said because I never made fun of the kid. I made fun of wrestling. But wrestling fans are kids, so they thought, oh, he's making fun of the kid. By the way, turns out the kid was autistic. Didn't know that because guess what? I'm not up in his Wikipedia page looking up his whole life.
But I think that part is probably something that is regrettable.
But I didn't make fun of the kid.
I understand, but arriving...
If I said his dad is ugly, but his kid is... I mean, it has nothing to do with it. It was an irrelevant point.
It was a photo of the child celebrating with his dad's title.
The headline was, watch as Kevin Owens' kid celebrates his father winning the Intergalactic Solar System Championship. And I said... Until he finds out that it's all fake. That's not making fun of the kid. That's making fun of the fact that wrestling is not a sport that you can live and die with who's winning and who's losing because it was all scripted.
But these are the perils of saying anything about a child.
Didn't say it about the child.
But the video featured a child. The child just so happened to be autistic. Amin did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
But then he ended up getting dragged by wrestling Twitter.
Not wrestling Twitter. What's the one that wears like a plaid shirt and a mask like he's...
Mick Foley?
Yeah, the make-believe guy who apparently is now an exec with WWE. So these assholes call ESPN.
No.
What?
He was a general manager at the time, but it was an on-camera position. Continue.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't give a shit. Like I said, I'm not up in his Wikipedia page. So let me tell you, put it this way. WWE formally called ESPN looking for like blood. So ESPN came to me and said they want to apologize. I said, you know what? Give me Kevin Owens' number. I'll call him. I'll say, my bad. Didn't know about the kid, even though I wasn't talking about the kid, but my bad. They said, no, they want it to be public. I said, oh, so you want to play this game? Okay. So I said, all right. I started to fight it. Eventually, my agent, shout out to Lou, said, look, man, there are only so many magic bullets you have at any given time in your career. Do you want to use one on this dumb shit, or do you just say sorry and move on? And I said, you know what? That's logical. I will apologize publicly and keep it moving. ESPN PR wrote an apology for me. There's like, you might have to use Twit longer for this. I'm like, out of here. I'm not.
Seriously.
700 characters?
I love that your apology for this is longer than Gruden's was for leaving for resigning on the Raiders.
Oh no.
And had more thought behind it as well.
They wrote this long apology. In it, they said, I mean, I should look it up because the apology itself is so ridiculous. It's something along the lines of, I made a bad joke. And I said, wait, hold on now. The joke was funny. I don't whether it was in poor taste or not, you're not going to tell me I make bad jokes, right? So
it's debatable. You should have used predetermined.
Well, first of all, you don't talk to me after yesterday. You said the Purdue did their Purdue duties, and you guys just let that one slide.
It's a good joke.
No, it's a good line. Yeah.
So nice I said it twice.
Bad ally. Duties, huh? Bad
that's
ally.
A good line, Mike.
Bad ally. You got Greg Cody over here, and it's a bad ally to have on good line, Mike.
Okay, here we go.
So this, you're claiming that this is not your apology. You're claiming that this is in your name, but that ESPN wrote it for you.
I'm claiming that this is the apology ESPN wrote for me, and then I sent back my version, which eventually became the actual apology. So what they made me write was, I tried and failed to make a joke about wrestling in a tweet earlier this week. It was unoriginal and in horribly bad taste.
Wow.
So far, so good.
I sincerely apologize to Kevin Owens and his family. While I love Twitter because it's interactive and it brings out my voice and personality, You still need to handle yourself appropriately. I plan to give more thought to that concept as I proceed in this space.
Wait, forward. That one's a copy paste. I've seen that one before from ESPN.
That is so awful.
This is how I responded. That's not the act. This is how.
Finish the last sentence again. Read the last corporate sentence. You could have used four words there, and they used about 20.
I plan to give more thought to that concept as I proceed in this space going forward.
Well, you were. That was not at all accurate, considering the Spider-Man GIF.
Again, post company, a lot more freedom on the ship. So, this is what I responded bit by bit. I said I tried and failed to make a joke about wrestling in a tweet earlier this week. I said, first of all, I didn't fail. The joke landed, right? Second of all, what does it matter, right? It was unoriginal and in horribly bad taste. You might say it was in bad taste. I didn't know, again, the circumstances of the kid. But unoriginal, who cares? Oh, I came up with this joke all on my own. No, I stole it from a joke book. Why does that matter in an apology, whether it was original or not? Yeah, if it was original, would that have been fine?
Because some wrestling fans have never heard wrestling is fake.
All right, then you should be used to it.
No. It's the first time I've ever heard it. Thank you for illuminating.
Then you should be used to it. You should be used to it, right? I sincerely apologize to Kim. That was fine. While I love Twitter because it's interactive and it brings out my voice and personality, that's not why I love it. You still need to handle yourself appropriately, okay? I plan to give more thought to that concept. And I said, yo, I legit, every single person will read that line and know it's full of shit because I will never give more thought to this concept at all. As soon as this 2-week suspension is over, I'm back at it like a crack addict.
I always thought it was...
Was that in your apology?
No.
Back at it like a crack at?
That was in the facts, like Jordan's facts. I'm back.
This is my apology, and this is what I sent back to PR. The title was, This Fits in 140 Characters. I tweeted a joke about wrestling earlier this week, and it was in poor taste. I sincerely apologize to Kevin Owens and his family. And that's the apology that went out. And it's true. I apologize to Kevin Owens and his family. But I don't apologize to wrestling or their fans.
How many times I remember just ridiculous conversation after ridiculous conversation that had you arguing with PR about whether a joke landed. And first of all, I don't trust PR of any company to be okay with any kind of jokes. But you, wrestling PR, always felt to me over social media like wrestling an alligator uselessly. And at the end of it, you'd leave like pumping your fists. I won, but you had just wrestled an alligator and it bit you all over. And it just seemed unpleasant because you got horribly distasteful out of there, but they still forced you to apologize for something you didn't want to apologize for.
You should see the alligator.
The alligator's fine, man. The alligator's still doing the job the same way. The alligator?
Is
the PR alligator? Like, I'm not saying that they've got good PR as a company. I'm saying PR.
I'm not in the news.
You think you won versus PR? That's what you think? All right.
Never
ESPN
lost.
PR is definitely going about their business differently now than they did before.
Yes. Them.
They encountered Amin El-Hassan.
It was my
wrestling convictions.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
We like to call this one a chorus of Owen Wilson. Yeah. Ready?
Stugatz.
Wow.
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 This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Well, you know, something we haven't talked about, and I think it could be said now, because we have not talked at all about what happened at the roast, the Jason Jackson roast, involving Amin El-Hassan, which is as a surprise, with Darth Vader's Star Wars music behind him, he was introduced. He was going to, and he just told me now, he had 7 minutes of shrapnel to spread throughout the room. And as he's being introduced with very echoey, evil music, somebody shuffles on stage and whispers, like on The View before, you know, two hosts tested positive for coronavirus as Kamala Harris was going out there. Amin never showed up because he got stopped at the front door having tested positive for COVID.
It was described to me like the guy that whispered to George Bush when 9/11 happened.
It was awkward because we were just all sitting there waiting after a very dramatic entrance. I expected you to come out in a cape, in a black cape and some Darth Vader type feel, but you had 7 minutes of material.
Oh, yeah.
Do you still have that material? Do you want to work out that material right now?
Yes. Some of this stuff is not.
No, we're good.
That's not, no.
Yeah.
Judgment today is not.
A lot of the stuff.
The best part was the lack of communication, because you were announced. It was like, now coming to the stage, Amin El-Hassan, and everyone's just kind of looking around, and then it was just kind of like Jack.
It was my dad's voice. Yes. My dad had recorded something. I asked my dad, I think I told you guys this story. I asked my dad, how could you betray me? And he just yelled, the money, buddy. And then he ran off.
So it's weird because it happened at the front, and the guy I talked to was like, he was on the phone to see, and he's like, yep, sorry, you can't. I thought he was talking to Jax. So I was like, oh, well, I guess the message has been relayed. Let me skedaddle on out of here. I did not know that he was talking to someone else. So, and Jax had texted earlier about something else, hadn't responded to me. So I just figured he's really busy, but he asked people who are telling him these things. So it was an unfortunate misunderstanding.
How did they tell you in the room? Because there's a room full of people that are waiting to get tested. So I imagine it's kind of like an under the table thing. Like, hey.
Well, Tony saw it happen.
Well, he just saw you in there and then you disappeared.
No, Tony saw it happen.
Oh, you knew.
He saw it happen. Like, they pulled me aside and kind of like, yeah, they talk to you like this. And
out of the side of their mouth, instead of telling you, giving you like a vigorous thumbs up, you're negative, they just, out of the side of their mouth, they're like, listen, you're going to carry some shame with you here for about 10 days.
Going to need you to walk out this back door.
Like a ventriloquist, they talk to you.
Listen, you're not going to be able to live in Freedomville.
actually, no, quite the opposite. Tick your ass back to Freedomville. I had one line I think I can do here.
One line in 7 minutes of material. First of all,
I think is the scary part on this.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get Metalark PR to wrestle him when he does this, and we have to apologize to an assortment of people.
Just out of curiosity, have you gotten around to testing negative yet?
That occurred to me. That occurred to me.
I left my mask in the car
several times. Thank you for asking. Thank you for the
cool.
Yeah, the concern.
How long ago?
This was all last week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Am I 6 feet from Amin right now? I can't tell.
No,
it's five and a half.
Yeah, 5.5. Yeah.
Right.
The PCR. God bless the PCR. But the line was, because I was literally shooting across the room at everyone who was there. I said, oh, University of Miami Athletic Department is here. No wonder the football team f-ing sucks. Nevin Shapiro died for this. Thanks a lot, Dan Le Batard.
Did you have jokes?
Yeah, I also said wrestling was fake.
Oh, wow.
Unoriginal.
Horribly bad taste.
That's the one joke you have from 7 minutes of material that you wanted to... That's the only joke that's been sanitized enough among... Because Jason Jackson took the cell phones because he didn't want anybody getting fired. Mm-hmm. And he wants to be able to control and edit the content. And a roast is supposed to be on the dark edge. Have you seen, I don't know if you've seen, that the director of Airplane has now decried cancel culture and saying that he couldn't have made, you know, a seminal comedy of the time. I don't understand why comedy has to translate across time. You're allowed to look at comedy during a time and say, well, that would be inappropriate now. But he's saying that Airplane, which I didn't even think of as that edgy, that Airplane wouldn't have been able to survive cancel culture. But again, I haven't seen Airplane in about 30 years, so maybe I'm wrong about what Airplane was.
Stewardess, I speak jive.
Yeah, the jive turkey stuff.
I mean, it's hilarious, but that's the stuff that today would never fly.
Really? In a comedy?
Well, let me put it this way.
Careful, Dad.
Let me rephrase.
Your dad in these waters is funny. I don't think you should warn him to be careful. Chubby. I want him to go up to his nipples in these waters because one day he's going to say something you must not understand anything that's happening in comedy right now.
No, I do, but you know, the director is Dave Chappelle, fine, then he can make a joke about that, right? I mean, that's what we're dealing with here, right? By the way, parenthetically, Leslie Nielsen is buried in the same cemetery in Fort Lauderdale as my wife's mother. Just
Is that true?
Yeah, wow. That is true.
No, it's not.
No, 100%. I'm going to take a photo of Nielsen's
Please
grave.
Do.
Yeah, I will.
Sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Billy.
One of my favorite things on this show is when Cody says something that's a total narcissistic non sequitur and everyone's looking at him like that doesn't have anything to do with whatever the point was we're talking about. And then Billy leaps into
it does,
the frame.
Though. It's a fun fact. We were talking about airplane. Greg had an airplane fact. We're sharing the facts.
Right? You can double down on your anarchy if you want, as if I don't know what you're doing. You haven't spoken all show, and when Greg Cody says the dumbest thing, you leap into the thing with, like, swords. You're like a
samurai.
Are
your grandparents buried next to any famous people, Dan? Huh?
Probably not.
My grandparents are buried near Anthony Abraham, car magnate.
Wow, that's nice.
Wow. Rest in power.
I buried my grandparents.
In the backyard?
What else do you have from that roast material, 7 minutes of roast material that can, and what else can be said about that night that was funny for you? Because to prepare 7 minutes of material is a bit of a pain, and you never got to perform it, which I imagine, the whole thing you flew in for, you were going to be a big surprise. I imagine that was very frustrating for you. I never even saw you.
Yeah, no, I saw your parents, which if I did have COVID, that would have been really disastrous at that moment.
Then you would help me bury my parents.
Dark.
So if you keep saying if you did have COVID, you think that this was a faulty test because you immediately got another one and got a negative?
I got a PCR and I got a negative on that one. The rapids. And he told me that. The guy at the front said the rapids, they're not 100% reliable, but we can't take any risks, which I respected.
Greg, I verified that Leslie Nielsen is buried in Fort Lauderdale. Have you seen the headstone? Because the headstone famously says, let her rip. Like, that's all that it says.
Yeah, I knew it said something funny or something quippy, but I didn't remember it was that. But yeah, thank you for verifying that, Billy, because whenever I give a quick aside, it's always the truth. It's never a joke.
11 years already.
Got yeah, how about soon. That?
Not true at all. R.I.P. That's not absolute at all. You're always given parenthetical asides that aren't in any way true. Would it be unseemly? Would it be macabre, not Patrick Mahomes' brother, macabre, for him to just that overtly try and get clicks off of the tombstone of Leslie Nielsen?
I think so.
Yeah, that's not.
Clicks? What are you talking about?
You said, you didn't say you were going to show us a photo. I think you said you were going to take a photo of it and put it on social media.
No, I would never do that. Out of respect to Nielsen, I would have, if Billy hadn't verified what I said, I would have taken a photo just to show the room to that's the bona fide,
Dad,
right there.
You've pitched we do a live hit for the Greg Cody show from his tombstone.
Well, it would have been a good pitch. I mean, would have been a good bit. But you vetoed it, so you're fired.
The way he thought and contemplated about it, and I was like, you know what? There's no way out of this one. I just got to own it.
No, he was cornered. He was cornered, and all he did was stumble into pitch, bit, stumble around. Yeah. He's like, I don't have a funny quip here.
Right.
Nope, I just tried to do the awful thing that they accused me of to get promotion for my podcast.
He put a bench in front of it, too, apparently. So I guess visitors can come and just sit there?
That's where he wanted us to sit
and
do the podcast.
It's a good place to do a podcast. In terms of like all the plots there.
Now, Billy, I've Googled this Anthony Abraham guy, and man, that is a magnate if I've ever seen one. Look at this picture right here. That's a magnate right there. You see that with the cigar? It's a posed picture, but he's got the lit cigar, the Rolex watch, and he's kind of looking at the camera like, I make a lot of money. What do you want?
This is not a video medium, so you're showing us the photo of somebody that no one else can see here.
Don't worry, I'll post it.
Maybe you should go to Leslie Nielsen's grave and post it from Leslie Nielsen's grave. A terrible idea, I got to admit, for Greg Cody to court the controversy of sitting on a bench taping a podcast from Leslie Nielsen's grave.
It's a terrible idea. Even I was not following one.
I mean, I can justify it. It's a public cemetery. Oldest cemetery in Fort Lauderdale, by the way. Another parenthetical. And it's open to the public, and I'm free to bring a recording, and they would be all done in love.
How do we feel about cemetery walkers?
Oh, we hate those. I did it back in my day.
Wait, you hate them, but you're cool just doing a podcast from someone's tombstone?
No? Cemetery podcaster.
It's out of respect.
Those you're good with.
It's out of respect, yeah.
Cemetery walkers you think is offensive. Cemetery potters, that's fine.
Don't use my cemetery for your health, for your walking and running and jogging.
Exactly.
You know, you get your earbuds on, running past my grave. Get out of my cemetery.
If there's one thing cemeteries are not about, it's health.
That's right. Good point, Billy.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. If there's one thing cemeteries are not about, it's health. Yeah. Yes or no? You don't feel at all absurd making the arguments for how it's respectful to do the Greg Cody show featuring Greg Cody from Leslie Nielsen's grave, but you think cemetery walkers are offensive?
Right. I'm not making any noise. You know, the footfall is not disrupting the peace because I'm speaking softly. The pitch was I'm speaking softly, reverently. There's soft organ church type music in the background, and it's not the entire podcast. It's like a 10-minute segment.
Would this be for a Halloween episode?
I don't think it was pegged to a holiday. It just occurred to me that we have this famous Wayne Huizing is also buried there. Another true parenthetical. Same cemetery.
I think you should interview these people. From the grave. Get like a
seance?
Yeah.
No.
Get a medium there.
No, that's probably it. Yeah.
No.
Poltergeist over here. No.
Didn't we try to have a medium on the podcast once?
Didn't we have one on Freedom?
Yeah.
Ended up getting a large.
The last 15 minutes of our Freedom Hour.
Oh, that's too bad.
Thanks, bro.
We were talking back here about how, because I said an owner of a cemetery must love death. And we got to discussing what business out there just loves death the most. And florists, Woody mentioned, I feel like florists have got to be up there.
Not the most, though. The most is the funeral home guy.
Yeah.
That guy's number one. No one has ever.
The Undertaker.
Yeah.
Andre Dawson loves death.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like he checks the obituaries and just gives a nice little fist pump.
It is. The dying,
nine today. We got nine.
Dying business is good. It never fails to deliver. I don't think there's ever a recession. Right now, business is booming.
Mm-hmm.
The flower industry.
Yeah.
Steve Martin was a prop comic.
You said flowers? You said florists. Yes. Yeah. Yes, sir. Sorry.
You got in there so vigorously, too. It was even with a finger point. You got in there.
He did the Herm Edwards. He had the elbow on the table.
And
he
was like, you got in there with a finger like, I've got it. I've got the thing that's going to blow their minds. And it's a thing that was said 15 seconds ago.
The thoughts and prayers business.
Yeah, green cards. Wow. Yes, yes.
What else? Funeral home is at the very top. People who enjoy dying. Businesses that enjoy dying.
Do you enjoy it, or are you just trying to make a living off it? Because so Chris was saying that people who work in the funeral business like death.
Yeah, love it.
And I just, that seems a bit much.
Hey.
I feel like it's like, hey, someone has to fulfill this space within commerce.
Witty.
And so they've decided to make this their family business.
And we have to charge an exorbitant amount of money to do this.
Hey, love your job. Never work a day in your life.
That's true.
Ooh, grave robbers like death.
Yeah, hearse makers.
Mm.
What do you say? Crematories.
The same as the
same.
Right?
Just a branch of the big booming business.
It's branching off. Yes.
Cremation is the thing now, right? I mean, do people actually still have full-fledged funerals?
Are there still grave robbers? Is that a thing that's
1,000%?
Yeah, there have to be.
Booming.
Mm-hmm.
That's a macabre way to make a living. Like, how do you grow up one day and say, you know what? I've reached such a desperate point. I'm going to go ahead and try and strip this skeleton of its tie clip.
Here's the thing, though, Dan. You do it once and you get that high. Now you're chasing that high for the rest of your life.
Chasing the dragon. Is that right?
It's true. Teddy Demas and his son were doing it for a while, and then they got caught.
Yeah. How about that? They got caught on a murder that no one was even investigating.
Crazy. Crazy how that happened.
Talk about skullduggery, am I right?
Billy, you got in there so fast. You got in there so fast to support Cody.
That was great. I love Billy.
Leslie Nielsen, Dan.
No, but and his point, like, he never made the point. We were in a serious conversation about, and it was better to go to the funny place, but his parenthetical point was the only point he actually wanted to make, which is, let me give you this Leslie Nielsen information, which was a good decision.
He uses death for comedy all the time. He uses this thing with his family having a history of dying with, like, undercooked pork. He uses it for comedy all the time.
Wait, how many people have died due to undercooked
pork? Go ahead, Dad, do the thing.
No, I mean, it's a matter of record. Three generations ago, my grandmother's mother died from, there's a word for eating on, is strychnosis or some medical word. Back then it was a thing, you know, nobody went to the doctor, at least in my family. My grandmother was born on a kitchen table, that kind of thing.
What?
But, you know, eating uncooked pork, she died of it.
Nellie?
No, it was Nellie's mother.
Oh.
Yeah. Who I never met, whose name I can't even recall.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that.
It's trichinosis, Greg.
Trichinosis. Isn't that what I said?
You're in that ballpark.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
The sad thing is it's completely avoidable.
It is.
Just cook the pork?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the sad thing.
Nellie had died of diabetes, which she always annoyingly referred to as sugar diabetes, an oxymoron. Not an oxymoron, redundant. But
it's all right.
She never went to a doctor in her entire life, never saw a doctor one time, and she died in her early 60s, totally preventable. It's a sad tale. Nellie Doogie.
A sale.
Don Lebatard.
He, for some reason, would do a Gary Stevens impersonation of the offensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins and the University of Miami. Go ahead. Do you want to do that for the people? Your Gary Stevens impersonation? You want to give people some of that? 30 years in the making.
Stugatz.
What? Who needs me?
Oh, that?
What? You got my whole life. You're going to go to Buffalo and win with Bernie Pomeli? Who needs me?
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Cody, what do you have for me on the Dolphins? Because that one felt bad, uncommonly bad, to lose to the team that's been medicine for everybody in the league for 20 straight games.
Yep.
And have everyone laugh at you as the sole game on a sad Sunday morning. Tua played well enough. You can see that this team could be more competent, obviously, if he's out there instead of the backup. But what do you say to what I was saying earlier, that part of the hostility you feel from the fan base right now is that it has so rarely had a chance to hope about anything? It's like Ronnie Brown. And was it Ronnie and Ricky in doing the Wildcat in New England? There have been so few moments in the last 20 years that allow you to hope about anything
right
here. And this fan base this year came into it with the hope that Tua would grow and the team would parlay 10-6
for sure
into something.
Yeah, for sure. I think coupled with a victory, Tua's performance would have been that shining moment because, you know, for the first time, Tua actually outperforms Justin Herbert on a Sunday, except for that one terrible pick. I thought Tua was great.
But did he outperform Trevor Lawrence? It was kind of a push, right?
Well, the metrics from Pro Football Focus say that Tua had the best quarterback day in the league, and it would have been that much better if not for that bad pick. But Stephen Ross is very angry right now. He's old. He's old enough to be really impatient. He's never had a good team in his whole ownership. He's poured $450 million into the stadium. He's built a brand new training facility. And he said when introducing the training facility a few months ago, there's no excuses now. I mean, he said that right in front of his general manager and his head coach. He's 81 years old. He didn't have time to put up with all this wheel spinning. And I think Sunday, Brian Flores
felt the hot seat. I think for the first time in his third season, Brian Flores is under legit pressure right now. Because the saving grace, though, is that you saw improvement in Tua. You finally saw Tua playing with tender ribs look good. And I think that's something to build on, because throughout the NFL, the one thing that seems true is that if you have a great quarterback, it fixes so many ills. And if Tua is what we saw Sunday, for the most part, then that's a big deal, even in defeat.
I feel like this is just fans and the media freaking out. He can't be on the hot... 3 weeks ago, the Dolphins fans were in love with Brian Flores. Right. Is it really that flimsy?
It's five losses in a row, which is a season killer. After a 10-win season, set up hope.
Your quarterback was hurt, though.
I understand that. They were 0-3 under the backup quarterback.
Can we put that exchange in a capsule? That exchange. Your quarterback was hurt, though. I understand. Well, no, if you understand, like, that's what happened. What happened is they've lost five in a row because their quarterback got hurt. And they would be unlikely to have lost five in a row if their quarterback had not gotten hurt.
I think what's happening with the Dolphins is that it's not first and foremost about the quarterback. Brissett, by the way, is an above-average backup.
May I ask you guys, if Tua didn't get hurt, who do they beat out of those five losses?
Bucks and Bills were two of them.
I mean, the Raiders, they had the
Brissett, his best game.
The Colts and Raiders, you could have said they could have won those games.
I'll extend you credibility, and injuries matter, but Tua just came back, had a good game, and they still lost to the Jags. I don't necessarily think it changes losses to wins.
Even in that Raiders game, Brissett was still at 4.4 yards per attempt. He leads the comeback, but it was not an impressive performance from Jacoby Brissett in trying to get the Dolphins closer in that game. I think Tua, on a good day, gives him a chance. We just saw him have a very good day off a ribs injury.
And lose to the only winless team in the league.
But Mike, my point on this is, because that you're not going to argue that going from the starting quarterback to the backup quarterback almost on any team in the league, if I don't tell you anything else, is going to decrease your chances of winning. What I find interesting about what happens with the backup, all you need from the backup is, then this is where Brissett failed, is just make sure the season's not ruined. Just do enough. Look at last night's game in the NFL. Man, Tennessee was headed toward a pretty brutal 2-3. A pretty brutal 2-3. Because that's a good football team. We've seen that team be good for a couple of different years. And, you know, because Josh Allen didn't make his first fourth and short conversion ever. He's 13 for 13 in that spot, or maybe 13 for 14, and the only time he missed was a fumbled snap. The difference between 3-2 and 2-3 is right there at that goal line. Like, Tennessee feeling super shitty today at 2-3. The backup quarterback, the difference between a starting quarterback and a backup quarterback, Mike, has to be somewhere in there. I understand what you're saying. Who are they beating? But how about the Colts at home? How about the Colts at home with your starting quarterback?
Yeah, they got boat raced. I'm just throwing out the question. I think maybe the Raiders has a compelling argument, but I'm not necessarily, while Brissett was not at all impressive, again, loose sleeves, I just don't see any of those games switching from one side of the column to the other, because Tua's out there, especially when I have the most recent data of Tua just had his best game and they lost to the shitty ass Jags.
Look, the reason they lost, when Tua has a great game and they lose to a bad team, there are surrounding issues that continue to just be pulsing in red neon against this team. One of them is Derrick Henry wins the game last night. Every week this season, the opposing team has had a legitimate running back, whether it's Jonathan Taylor of Indy, go on down the line. Miami has no running game. They don't have a single running back who's been drafted into the NFL. They didn't address the lack of a running game. The starting offensive line is disheveled. They're young. They're getting better, but they're still not there. The Dolphins had a top five defense last season. Really good defense. Set a modern record for most consecutive games with a takeaway. This year, they're in the bottom five or bottom seven. The defense has just absolutely collapsed. Those are the reasons why the Dolphins are losing. It isn't first and foremost that Tua was injured, and it isn't first and foremost that Tua isn't good enough. It's everything else.
I just like the idea that Urban Meyer, remember earlier this season, he told one of the coaches of the teams he lost to, wow, it's like playing Alabama every week. And then this week, he's like, Maybe not every week.
You lose to Jacksonville. I mean, it seems like I'm having a form of this conversation every five or six games for many years now, where when's the last time it felt this bad? When's the last time you were this embarrassed by something? And I know that that's prisoner of the moment stuff, but losing the Jacksonville game when your quarterback of hope, again, I'm telling you, Nick, can we name them, please? Let's name them.
Quarterbacks of hope?
No,
for the Dolphins?
20 years of Dolphins. Give me the names where people were like, you know what? I've got hope.
Anytime you bring in a young quarterback, the fan base has hope that that quarterback is the guy to turn your favors around. I mean, John Beck may not jump off the screen to you, but people had hope about John Beck. People had hope about Ryan Tannehill.
Chad Henne, man, looked good at Michigan.
People had hope about Chad Henne.
But that's just hope that you're going to have for any new guy, right? Obviously.
Yeah.
Like, look at the names. But this wasn't that kind of hope. When I show you what's happening in Cincinnati, and I tell you, top pick there at quarterback, top pick there at wide receiver. Oh, look, no one's got a better deep game. There's not a guy you'd rather be throwing to deep in the league right now than Chase. That's what Waddle and Tua are supposed to look like when we're looking for all the special because of where they were drafted. Yeah, I mean, you were talking about these damn draft picks and the value they have. The top 10 guys got to break open games. Like, it's not Slant and Gesicki. Slant and Gesicki. Like,
well, the encouraging part is Waddle had his best game of the season. You use Burrow and Chase. You saw them do that in college. You've seen Tua and Waddle do it in college. Now, this is the NFL, but you hope those two specifically can recreate what they had occasionally. I know injury got in the way of them playing together a lot, but you've seen it happen with those two. You're not going to have like an Odell, Baker, Mayfield weird chemistry problem. So just if the Bengals are doing what LSU did, do what Alabama did. Go deep. Give me something. Don't use them like Jarvis Landry down here.
It's still early, and Waddle has a couple of these now, like 12 catches for 70 yards, 50 yards, and 10 catches for 70 yards. But when I'm analyzing where they drafted those two guys, and it's early, this is not fair to do yet to Waddle, even though Chase has looked great. I can't be envious of Carter Ruggs. I can't look at my two top 10 guys and look at what the Raiders have and be like, man, I'd love to see that every once in a while, even though Ruggs is a total one-trick pony.
Yeah, he's an inconsistent player. But I think what you're saying, Dan, is hope not in, well, we drafted a guy early, therefore we're going to get excited. It's proof of concept is what you're looking for. And the Dolphins have demonstrated precious little of it. Basically, their hope has kind of come from acquiring guys from other teams, like Ricky Williams, like Brandon Marshall when he arrived, like Mike Wallace when he arrived, where it's, well, I've seen this guy be good in the NFL in another place. We're going to run our offense through this guy, and so we have some hope about it. But even then, Ricky demonstrated his proof of concept in Miami, but it's all they had. And then the other two, you couldn't get the full amount of their talent into your offense in Marshall and Wallace's case.
And Ndamukong Suh had that surrounding him. Junior Seau had that surrounding him as well.
A couple of things about Waddle. If he's averaging 8 yards a catch, that's not on him. That's on the play calling. He has the ability to get deep. As they trust Tua more to take deep shots, and as the offensive line gives Tua that extra second in the pocket, you're going to see Waddle. You're going to see the offense open up. The other thing is, Sunday, when Waddle doesn't have Will Fuller or Devontae Parker to spread the field for him, he's more confined. So that limited what they could do with Waddle on Sunday.
I loved that list you guys just put together. And to reiterate my point, 20 years of Dolphins football, listen to the names that they just gave you, because they're right.
David Boston.
Mike Wallace and Junior Seau. David Boston. That, wait a minute, is that early 2000s?
You know what I'm doing in my mind? You know what I'm doing in my mind? That's going to be late 90s. No. That was 20 years ago because I was in high school. What I'm doing is going through the Greg Cody columns of they gotta get blank.
Dante Culpepper was another, by the way. When they got Dante Culpepper, that was a big deal. And it was Culpepper or Breeze. Obviously, they screwed it up. But at the moment, you're thinking, yeah, he's coming off a knee injury. He'll be fine. And that was, you know, the greatest offense in the NFL, Culpepper with Moss. And you're thinking you're bringing that to Miami.
I was definitely one of those people. I remember I was like, oh, they're about to be killing it. This guy threw for 100 touchdowns last season or whatever. He had the commercial for, was it Madden? Is everybody get your roll on? Like, oh, if there was anyone who came in with the pomp and circumstance of this dude's a superstar, it was Dante Culpepper.
David Boston was 2005. How many catches?
Four.
With so many muscles. So many muscles.
Yeah, he built himself out of the position. He just loved getting jacked. Gains.
He did. He had a couple of canned hams for arms, and those hopes were carried. He carried them. How long ago was that? Because
2005.
I love this. It's 15 years since David Boston gave us hope.
Four catches, that's hope.
Mike Wallace, the one that you mentioned, is great. That's a great one because I do remember thinking, you know, most people thought, well, that's the fastest deep threat in the league. He's going to take the top off of defense.
Oh, the top off. So many columns written by Greg Cody about the top being taken off that season. Greg, and then...
there was no top. The top of the toilet seat was closed.
Just turned into wide receiver screens for Mike Wallace. Yes.
Yeah, and the way that they got him in the ball every once in a while. Hey, let's have him return punts. Our quarterback can't throw.
Ooh,
the
don't
ball.
Forget about Brandon Albert.
No, that can't count.
Oh, Brandon Albert was hailed as an amazing signing. He was terrible for them, but absolutely, yeah. This town was on fire for the Brandon Albert signing.
Give me the most on fire this town has ever been with hope. You get only one name, Dolphin franchise, because this is a funny list that you guys are putting together. Is Ricky at the top of the list?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me. Ricky and then Saban, Nick Saban.
I think it's Tua. Maybe I was too young at like for those other people you're talking about, but I was never as excited when I thought we were. I mean, Tua, man, he was so good at Alabama.
Were you Tua young?
I see what you did there.
Yeah, that was good. I was jealous. I mean,
what?
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.